Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. This week, as always, we talk about topics that are relevant to your lives, those of you who are in what we call the last third of your lives. Remember, this is supposed to be the best, your best years, but it does require, unfortunately, your best planning. And toward that end, we have somebody today who's backed by popular demand. This person you've probably heard on the show before. Susan, you want to introduce our guest?
Well, we are very happy to have back with us Mark Werner, who has been in the financial services industry since 1981, and he focuses a lot on retirement income planning as well as investment and estate planning. Mark is the owner of Cornerstone Advisors and is a certified financial planner as well as a retirement income certified professional. Now, Mark speaks to many different public and industry groups on retirement issues. And because I'm sitting in a room with lawyers, I have to say this little legal part: securities and investment advisory services offered solely through Emeritus Investment Corporation, member FINRA and SIPC. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you, Welcome. Susan, and thank you, Joe, for having me back. As always, I'm excited to hopefully help out our listeners today.
Well, and I want to emphasize something that Susan just said. I mean, your qualifications are as a financial planner, but that includes a variety of financial areas of expertise. I mean, you're a certified financial planner. I'm really big, incidentally, those of you listening, I'm really big on whenever you're going to have an advisor. I don't want to make too broad a statement, but my tendency is to look for those who are certified financial planners. It is a rigorous process to get certified, and I tend to think that these are the people who know the most. So there are exceptions, but as a general rule, if you look for somebody who's a certified financial planner, then you're probably more likely to get someone who has the experience you need if we're talking about financial planning. And, of course, you have various other designations. So here's the reason we're having Mark Werner on today is we talk about the fact that long-term care is a huge issue, and especially as we age, we're trying to figure out how do we reconcile our budgetary needs on a day-to-day basis, housing, food, et cetera, and the prospect that we may need long-term care. Many people now realize, and those of you who don't, I need to inform you, that Medicare is not going to pay for your long-term care. And as a result, there needs to be some other means to cover that. So, of course, Cordell Planning Partners is a firm that's devoted to elder law. It's devoted to the legal side of these issues. But we found that to simply talk about that piece of it leaves you empty in terms of a lot of information that you need. So we thought we need to bring somebody on who can talk from a financial perspective about these challenges paying for long-term care. So why don't we start, Mark, by discussing the issue. In other words, how do people, when they come to you with this financial challenge, how is it that it fell upon them? Does it typically come in the form of a traumatic event? Or is it something that they realize is coming down the road and they're getting ahead of it?
So, Joe, the normal person who walks in, unfortunately, walks in after the issue has already reared its ugly head. And so hopefully today one of the things we're going to do is encourage people, no matter who you go to, that you address this well ahead of time. So
tell me what might have triggered it, though, when you said that something's come up.
So typically we've got, and in the more average scenario, it's the husband who has now had a health issue and his wife is caring for him at home and it's become too difficult. So now we're looking at, do we need to go to assisted living? Do we need to get, you know, actual long-term care, custodial care of some sort? And the wife is going, I can't handle it alone. And in this day and age, my children don't live close by to help out. We now need professional help, and we don't know how to pay for it.
And that's a big issue now, mm-hmm. that what at one time you would have multiple generations living in one house, caring for each other. But now families find themselves on all corners of the continent, and often you'll find a couple aging in a particular city without children nearby. And even then, there's only so much kids can do. So you've described a scenario where it's not so much that everything was perfect, everything was fine, so to speak, no clouds in the sky, and suddenly somebody has a traumatic event such as a heart attack or stroke. And, of course, I'm sure those exist. But many of your people, they're aware that there's a health issue. Perhaps they have had some heads up from a doctor that there's something degenerative. I mean, many of these, I'm told, relate to diseases that are inherently degenerative, and that, if anything, are a red flag. I mean, type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm. Congestive heart failure, various things to where if you know that you have this diagnosis, that's a pretty clear sign that you need to be developing a plan to pay for these costs.
Absolutely. And I think we need to be developing the plan well ahead of time, even if we don't think we're going to be the one to suffer from it, because statistics say almost everyone is going to need long-term care for at least a short period of time before the end of their life.
So let's assume that the people we're talking to are middle class. And the reason that we should make that assumption is if you're wealthy, then you're probably going to be able to fund this with or without the planning if you have the assets. And then on the lower end, if you don't have any assets, then you qualify for Medicaid. And so you, in that case at least, perhaps it's the only advantage of that condition, mm-hmm. is that you know that you'll have your long-term care costs covered. So let's talk about the middle class, and let's go through some of the possibilities. Where should we start? Should we start with the possibility of long-term care insurance?
So long-term care insurance is, in my estimation, the best choice if you can afford it. So let's start with a qualification of our middle class. I typically start with $100,000 of assets. I know a lot of other advisors that will go as low as $50,000 of assets. But so
that's pretty low. Because you fear the value of a house.
We're talking liquid assets, not
okay.
your house.
All right.
Okay? So you've got $50,000 in your 401k, in the bank, in a CD, whatever. So whether it's $50,000 or $100,000, now we look at, can we afford the insurance? The younger you are, the more likely it is that you can afford the insurance, and more importantly, the more likely it is that you can actually acquire the insurance, because the insurance company is going to look at your health. So let's go back, Joe, to that example. You mentioned the type 2 diabetic. They might not be able to get that long-term care insurance now because they've already got the health problem. So I'd want to be talking to that person in my perfect world, and we know we don't live in the perfect world, but in my perfect world, I'd want to discuss that with that person when they first had the doctor tell them, hey, if you don't lose some weight and start eating better, you could have problems in the future.
But, you know, you read about how long-term care insurance seems to be in trouble in some respects because so many companies have been getting out of it. And I think that it's difficult for them to price it. And they're finding that the people who are most likely consumers, the people who want to buy it, often can't afford it or, as you say, don't qualify. I mean, it's not unusual, is it, to hear that of somebody in their 60s that would be charged close to $1,000 a month for long-term care insurance?
In your 60s, unless you're going for a Cadillac plan, I'm going to argue probably $200 to $400 a month, which is still a lot of money, but you can get a good plan, reasonable. One of your issues has been, as you said, the mispricing of the product and everybody getting out of the business. The good news, in my estimation, is we now have about 40 years of pricing. I think the companies have finally figured out how to mathematically price the product so it doesn't keep skyrocketing. Another thing to think about is, just like anything else, you may not be able to do all that you want with your insurance, but you can make an impact. So, give you an example, Joe. You are looking at an average nursing home in the St. Louis area. It's probably about $180 a day right now. Well, we could get you $180 a day of insurance. We could get you $300 a day to plan for the future. but maybe you can afford $75 a day. Well, at $75 a day, your assets are going to run out if you're in there a long time. But if you're in there a short time, you gained far more control over where you went, what type of nursing home, what type of care, and most importantly, on almost every plan, you get home health care. So you could have stayed in your house off of that $75 a day. So doing something is far better than doing nothing.
And I know that that there are some advantages. And so I'm reluctant to suggest to a client that they not consider long-term care insurance. But I do see the reasons that many people end up saying no or simply not an option. And I'm also thinking, when I'm thinking about a skilled care facility in this area, depending on its quality, I mean, you could be talking about, I think you were assuming maybe, what, $5,400 a month versus
right.
It could easily be $12,000, depending on if you want a nice place.
Some of the nicest right now are $15,000 to $18,000 a month. And if you need memory care, or I had a client once who was on a ventilator 24/7, and there was only two places in the entire metro area, that was about $22,000. So it can get ridiculously expensive quickly.
So, but the products now do give, as you point out, they give a lot of flexibility. So, and it certainly was a huge step forward to allow you to start getting benefits when you're at home. I mean, it's a mm-hmm. terrible waste of resources to require people, as Medicaid still does to some extent, though there is. Home and community-based waiver services, it's called. So there's starting to be a push across the country for Medicaid to pay out to discourage people from going into nursing homes simply because it's the only thing they can get paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge waste of taxpayer dollars, not to mention the patient as well if they're paying for it. So in any case, I do see advantages of insurance, but it does have its problems, as you agree.
Absolutely.
Whether it's qualifying because of your health condition or the cost. So let's move to other possibilities. So this hypothetical person, Mark Warner, that's come in to see you regarding this financial challenge that suggests perhaps some sort of long-term care. Tell me what the conversation would look like.
Okay. So what we're going to need to figure out is what type of daily or monthly benefit do we need? So how much cash flow is going out? We're going to look at, are you married and what does your spouse need to survive on? Then we're going to look at what type of cash flow you have coming in and do you have any other assets? And we talked a little bit about this the last time, Joe, is using your home and a reverse mortgage as a possibility to fund some of those expenses. I'd rather not have to do that, but it's there. It's a large asset for most of our clients, and it's a great idea to look at that and potentially tap into the reverse mortgage instead of going on Medicaid.
But now what about if they have some assets that are tax deferred? So, and I find this commonly, is that the bulk of someone's liquid funds are in the form of 401ks, mm-hmm. IRAs, et cetera. And so their dilemma is, well, if I pull this money out, then I'm going to be paying taxes on it. And many people are obsessed with trying to never pay taxes on those dollars. And that's a different conversation. But the point is, how do you tell them to deal with this cash need at this time in terms of prioritizing their assets? Would you say first from the tax deferred, or would you say, no, consider exhausting your other resources first?
I apologize. I'm going to give a political answer here. It really gets down to the individual, because we're going to look at, can you take a tax deduction on any of your medical expenses? So some of that money coming out may, in fact, be tax-free. Not that it's free, but after your deductions. Now, we leave that to a CPA such as yourself or someone else to actually determine, but I'll help walk them through the thought process. We then want to look at, where are they in their bracket? Because we may want to pull from the taxable portion from that IRA, that 401k, et cetera, up to the top of their current tax bracket because they're already paying there, and then start using previously taxed assets beyond. And then we'll switch back next year to tapping into that IRA 401k. And so that's where you actually need that team of professionals. You can have any one of us, whether it's the attorney, the CPA, or the CFP being the quarterback, but you need the whole team involved to make sure that you are maximizing every one of your dollars for your benefit.
That's why I'm going to say I need somebody like you guys to do that, because I'm going, okay, my what, this and that bracket, and the, there's a lot to consider, and having someone that you can trust and make those decisions and guide you through that process is really a benefit.
Yeah, and let's try to simplify it further, because Susan, you kind of bring us back down to earth about we need to keep in mind that some of our listeners are following this quite well.
Right.
And then others, though, may not be. So I want to take a step back a little bit. Let's talk about what the possibilities are if an average person is faced with long-term care costs. We'll assume that it's one of a couple. So there'd be one that would be living outside this long-term care facility and one that would be in. And we'll assume also that they may or may not be able to do some care at home. Usually that's an option up to a point, and then it ceases to be.
Well, and I just think that it's most people are just, they don't even know where to start. I think a lot of times what we mentioned earlier is there's a crisis. I think sometimes it's a fall. And no one, everybody thinks that they need to plan. Oh, I know I need to plan. I know I need to do that. But I think getting motivated and having the reason, and we don't have that reason until it's a crisis.
Until there's a gun to your head.
Until there's a gun to your head. And then we say, oh, now I need to do something. So that's where I think just starting the process and asking some of those questions is important.
Yeah, so then let's take that. Let's take Susan's perspective. And so let's go with my very simple scenario where there's a crisis, a married couple, one will be living outside or living in a home. We'll assume they own a home. And walk through the categories of assets that could be considered like a multiple choice of options. And you mentioned one, the reverse mortgage. But let's walk through the pieces on the table that we can consider moving around.
Okay. So first is obviously the home and the equity in the home. The second, which I see with most clients, especially in the middle class, is that retirement account, whether it's the IRA or the 401k. The third is your CDs, your savings account, Series EE bonds, anything that I call cash and cash equivalents. And then finally, and this is far less common, but you may have a brokerage account, a mutual fund, some other investments that have already been taxed.
And let's consider another possibility. Is possible that perhaps they have something they can sell? Whether it's a piece of land, an inheritance, whatever it might be, do you find sometimes that people will sell assets to generate the money for?
Not often. And that's because most of them, if they have an asset, there is some emotional attachment to it. And they want that passing on to the next generation. And I've seen people who will go out of their way and suffer personally against my recommendation just to keep grandma's farm home that's worth next to nothing in the family. And I understand that honoring the family history, but that's why I'm trying to drive people to show up and talk to us well before Susan's example of the fall.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that we can't simply ask our clients to think as COOs or CFOs rather of a company. I mean, there's going to be emotions involved, and some options they're going to exclude for their own reasons, and we have to expect that. Mm-hmm. And respect it. So let's then look at the possibilities. So there's something we can do potentially with a house, the things
right.
You said. There's something we can do potentially with the tax-deferred assets, which these are the IRAs, the 401Ks, et cetera. The third possibility is there's some cash floating around somewhere, cash, what you call cash equivalents. Another is there may be some tangible assets that can be sold, but perhaps not as commonly. And then finally, what about the opportunity to borrow money or to even seek gifts from family members, third parties? Is that often a source of financing for long-term care? Does that still exist today?
So I have not seen it as much of an opportunity through all my years, I've seen children step in and assist their parents, but I've never seen a parent ask for that financial assistance.
Yeah, they don't want to impose, and I think that's the mindset. But it just seemed like this sort of crisis would be one where, at least if we were talking about a family 100 years ago, they would marshal their resources in whatever way they could to help rescue this loved one. But I think we're living in a different world where it's not likely to happen that way.
Right. So what we're going to do is in this situation, and not to sell your services, but the very first thing I do when I'm talking to a client is I'm going to bring in the elder care attorney. I want to know for this specific person, what are all of our legal choices to protect assets? Now, because it's after the fact, you'll agree it becomes much more difficult, but there are still tools to potentially protect some.
Yeah, that's right.
I am most concerned about the spouse that is going to be left behind and protecting their lifestyle or some semblance of a lifestyle for them.
And that is a good point you raise, Mark Warner, is that often people will think more about how do we get these health care costs paid for, but really there's two sides to this problem. And in the example we're using here, there's a spouse that will still be trying to live from day to day and will need resources. So any plan has really got to be a twofold plan. It's got to consider the funds necessary, not just for the person who needs the long-term care, but their spouse.
Right. And that's where in a situation, as soon as possible, I like to have the children involved because many times the children will argue against protecting assets for their inheritance and argue for those assets to be used for mom or dad.
Yeah, that's what I've seen too.
And mom or dad are saying, I want you to have it.
I know, exactly. That's the way it goes down. I mean, maybe those of you who are cynical about motivations of kids regarding inheritance and whatnot, I can tell you that like you described, Mark, I more often see the kids who are, when they're in the room or they're participating in this discussion, and that happens commonly, the kids are emphatic that they want the assets to be arranged in such a way to where they can maximize the quality of care of their parents. That's what I see on a regular basis.
Right. So we sit down, we get everybody in the room, and unfortunately, we know that we're not going to have a perfect plan at this point because we're dealing with Susan's crisis. We've had the fall, we've had a sudden diagnosis, or unfortunately, you've had your head buried in the sand, and I don't like saying that, but we didn't want to admit that things were getting worse and worse, and all of a sudden, they're at a point where we've got to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. You probably don't say that to your clients, though, do you?
I've actually said it to some.
Maybe the stubborn ones, huh?
Well, and there is some of that. And those of you listening, the purpose of this show and our other shows is to allow you not only to be entertained, and I hope we achieve that, but more importantly, we hope it's beneficial. And sometimes that means jolting you. And as Mark Warner made reference a while ago, is that often these events that we're talking about now, what is now a crisis, didn't come out of nowhere. Often it's the result of chronic disease management. And whenever you have this diagnosis, maybe in your late 40s, probably in your 50s, but certainly this diagnosis would have occurred probably, if not before then, it would be in your 60s. So at that point, it's a call to action, and all too often that action doesn't take place, and then a crisis occurs at some point 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, which is what you're describing here.
Unfortunately, you're absolutely right. And so since we don't have a perfect solution, I want to lay out all the options, all the legal options, all the investment options. You know, can we take the money from the house? How do we draw it out of your IRA and minimize taxation? Can we use what's called a Medicaid annuity, which we won't get into today, but it's a tool that both we and the attorneys use. We want to lay out all the tools, and there's going to be one set of processes that's best for the person who's suffering. There's going to be a different solution that's best for the spouse left behind, and there's going to be a third solution often that's best for the children. We want to talk through all those because you need the buy-in from everybody so that you get everybody to work the plan for as long as possible.
Those are the words of Mark Werner, CFP, Chartered Life Underwriter, and various other miscellaneous designations. We'll be back in a few minutes. We're talking about how do you pay for your long-term care. Back in a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
We're back with Elder Talk, and with us today is Mark Werner with Cornerstone Advisors. Before we went into the break, we were talking about what advice do you give someone who is perhaps in their 70s or 80s, they're married, one of them has had a health care crisis, they're middle class, they have a home, they have some tax-deferred savings. In other words, a very common scenario, what advice is often given to someone under those circumstances? And let me take a step back and in walking into that answer, let's assume that these people probably did some planning, meaning that they had a plan of some sort, whether it was done formally or with the professionalism that might have been provided by an advisor such as yourself. But let's assume they had a plan, meaning they worked, they saved, they calculated that if I quit now with my Social Security coming in, with this, with that, I'll draw down from my 401k at a certain rate. I'm going to make it to retirement, and this is all good. My health care will be paid for by Medicare. Again, they may not have booked and probably did not book into the math the possibility that they need long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
So here this person has had a plan in place, and they've been reasonably responsible, which I think most middle-class people are. That's the reason that they've gotten where they are, is that they've been reasonably responsible. But they may not have planned for this crisis that we're assuming in this conversation, in this show. So when they pivot to a plan B, is it often more difficult to get them all the way to the end to pay for those costs when now we've thrown in a nursing home care period that could last, even though we know, and you comment, and you suggested, I think, Mark, earlier, that often it is less than 2 years, but still, it could be 3 years, and we won't assume the worst. But you're wondering, how does the plan survive introducing this factor into it? And let me throw in one other factor that we need to recognize in this conversation. The health care costs for this long-term care facility, if it's not paid by Medicaid, for example, and it probably won't be paid by insurance for reasons we've talked about. Most people don't have it. And if they do have it, it doesn't cover the full cost. And let's assume the nursing home cost is $10,000 to $12,000 a month. And if it's not that today, it's going to be. And we already know it could be more than that. But in St. Louis area, it's not uncommon to spend $10,000 to $12,000 for your nursing home care. So now let's go back to that person who perhaps a week before walking into your office, they're going through life with the assumption that they had a plan and that plan was pretty good. How do you walk them off that financial ledge when they come in to see you dealing with this grand disruption in their lives?
Well, the good news is they've come in to see me, or they've come to see you or some other professional, because that's the very first thing I would encourage any of them to do is you want an outside set of eyes helping you make the decisions when that crisis is there, when the pressure is on, when we're most apt to make bad decisions that seem to have a short-term fix and have long-term consequences.
So then let's first attack what I think may be a threshold question in that conversation, and that's what are the prospects for this being paid for by Medicaid versus they're paying for it out of pocket? I mean, the easy go-to solution, maybe not easy but simple, the simple go-to solution is to simply pay for it and assume that maybe it's not going to last forever. But I think that threshold question relates to, can we get a third-party source to pay? Namely, the elephant in the room, of course, is Medicaid. And you're right, that would involve a lawyer participating in the discussion. But I can tell you, as the lawyer in those scenarios, we do kind of talk about that first. We talk about, is there the prospect for it? And sometimes it's just not a legitimate plan because the assets are such that it's going to be difficult to pull off. Maybe there's this 60-month waiting period where in some cases it may not work. As you said a while ago, there are various tools in the toolbox. But some of those tools involve losing control of your assets. People don't like that. Mm-hmm. Or at least having constraints on their use. For example, if they use an irrevocable trust. So I sometimes find that clients are more comfortable with assuming some risk about paying out of pocket on a month-to-month basis, recognizing that it could go on a long time, but maybe won't. How many of your clients reach that conclusion rather than undertaking what we'll assume are a lot of efforts and a lot of conditions and constraints relating to the Medicaid qualification?
I'm going to say, before I push the issue, most of them, because it's simpler, it's easier, and we like the path of least resistance. However, what they haven't thought about is, what is that going to do to my spouse if he or she survives me and then survives me for a long period of time? I am not a fan of impoverishing your spouse just because it was the path of least resistance. So I will come back and argue that we need to look at those legal options and we need to protect as much of the assets for the spouse as we can. As you said, Joe, we can't protect all of them after the fact, but Medicaid gives us an amount that we can protect in addition to our house. And we won't go through the numbers today. If you've got the problem, please seek out Joe or some other attorney. But we get some protection there. Then we can, through creative tools that are in the legal field, we can protect more of the assets, not all of them. And then I can get in, or some other good financial advisor, and figure out how to invest the dollars that are going to go out the door for your care that you're going to pay for personally, and make sure that they go out in the most efficient manner so that they last the longest period of time before Medicaid kicks in.
So you raise an important point. I think that's a key driver in the discussion, is what funds will be available to the surviving or mm-hmm. to the spouse. Mm-hmm. And it might be that we have somebody who has, for example, $1 million in total value. That's not that unusual. That's still, I think, middle class if part of it's comprised of the home. I'm talking about all in, $1 million assets. But when you figure the rate of return that a spouse or anyone else will enjoy in today's market, I mean, interest rates, while they are up, they're still
3%.
Yeah, it's still not what it was, and they could go back down. And meaning that if we run into another crisis, then the Fed is going to, again, start lowering rates. So it could be something where even $1 million is not going to throw off that much money a year if you're talking about 1%. I mean, it's shocking how little that much money can produce in regular income. Now, some of the principal can be lived on, of course, but I can just tell you that regardless of the age of my clients, they worry about spending principal. And it's interesting. It's a phenomenon where, even though I'm at least doing the math in my head, if my client is 85 years old, I'm thinking, I think it's safe to start spending that principal. But I can tell you, they get really nervous about getting into that. And I understand that. I'm not critical of that, because I probably will be the same way. But it's an observation I make. Do you find clients are often nervous about pulling money away that may be needed for the surviving spouse without invading principal?
Oh, absolutely. But at the same time, they're looking at, well, we need the care, we'll just pay for it. And they're not thinking in that crisis moment. They're still thinking about, I don't want to spend principal if I don't have to, but they're not thinking about impoverishing their spouse. But that's what they're going to do. And that's where we need the attorney involved. And I hate to keep coming back to it, but it's so important. We need to protect the spouse every single time. And then we need to have the difficult conversation to help our clients understand. And I respect they've worked their entire life to gather these assets. They've been great stewards of those assets up till now. And now the whole reason they were a steward was to take care of themselves, not lavishly, not for fun, but to take care of themselves mm-hmm. in their twilight.
And it's not an abuse of a benefit. And I hear this sometimes, and I spoke at a church, as a matter of fact, last week, and a question was raised, sincerely felt, that is there not an ethical problem with somebody moving their assets around to qualify for Medicaid? And my point was that it's essentially the same issue about taxes. I mean, someone could argue that it's our duty, if you have a lot of money, to give a lot of money to the government so they can give it to the poor, right? But no one believes that. No one believes there's a moral duty to not take advantage of loopholes. And by loopholes, all I mean are exemptions, deductions, exclusions. These are things that are written into the statute for a purpose. It's not abusing the statute. It's using it for its intended purpose. These things are almost without exception things that were there by design. And whenever you fail to do that, I would argue it's a failure of stewardship. And so I think the same thing applies when we're talking about this, is that you can have $500,000 or $600,000 or $700,000, and often your dilemma is, do I pursue Medicaid? And if I do, then I'm going to need to move some things around. And with that comes some advantages and disadvantages. And as you raise, Mark Werner, the issue is that do we end up with more money, for example, for what's called the community spouse, the person who's living, who will not be in the nursing home, do they end up with more or less money when you go for Medicaid? And as you suggested a while ago, often they end up with more money, which would be our hope. But sometimes they don't. And it is a matter of doing some calculations as to that threshold question. My experience has been that maybe half the time or so that I'll have a client who will, for either consistent with or contrary to my advice, will decide that they're going to pay for it out of pocket. And then it's a matter of somebody such as yourself, I guess, helping them minimize the expense of that decision.
And Joe, on that topic, I always look at it this way. There is no right or wrong answer to your decision. It's an informed decision. If we've been able to, as professionals, lay out your choices on the table, tell you the pro and the con of every choice, and you've chosen, that's the right choice for you. So whether it's spending all your assets or availing yourselves of Medicaid if available, either choice is correct for you if you've made it as an informed decision. And my only desire, and I think your only desire, is to help our clients make that decision from an informed standpoint where they know the consequences of each choice and they choose the one they feel is right for them.
Yeah, and I do... I'm not quite as deferential to their judgment as you, meaning that I of course go with their judgment because they are the boss without exception. But it doesn't mean I always agree with it. And I see your point. I get your point. Your point is that at the end of the day, you want your client to make the decision that they're comfortable with. Sometimes I think clients are making the wrong decisions, and I tell them that, and that's my duty. That's what I think they're paying me for. But I hear what you're saying. I'm probably a little more assertive maybe than some professionals. And some people like that and some people don't. You know what I'm saying? And like they do with financial planners. They like some financial planners who are a little more insistent than others. And hopefully they find a personality that's compatible with theirs. But I know because you have so many clients, obviously your clients prefer your style. What were you about to say, Susan?
Well, I wonder if there's a way to maybe do both. I'm circling back around to something you said earlier, and maybe I misunderstood. But is there a way that people will pay a portion of their own expenses and then still, once they have said, okay, I can spend no more, I have to be destitute at that point and have to qualify for Medicaid? Does that make sense? Do you see the question I'm asking?
So let's take Joe's example of the person with $1 million, including the home. And I'm going to say the home's $200,000 and we've got $800,000. And the larger piece of it is inside their retirement plan, but we've got some money that's outside that they've been living on. Okay. Now, my first step is I get Joe involved because we can take some of those assets and day one protect them for the spouse. We can also, in that case, protect the entire house for the spouse because it's within the Medicaid limits. Then there are creative ways that change all the time. And the reason I need Joe or someone like him involved is for the maybe $600,000 of cash assets left behind, there are creative ways to protect some of that. So, and I'm just going to argue for the example here that we're able to, of that $600,000, put $300,000 away so that Medicaid doesn't see it, and $300,000 is left. Now, my client is going to spend $300,000 on his own nursing home care, home health care, whatever. When it is gone, he will now qualify for Medicaid, and Joe will have filled out the paperwork to get it to turn on as my client spends the last dollar of that money.
So as soon as that would be gone, the Medicaid could kick in and they would
And that has to be planned carefully. And you're right, is that sometimes people will form a structure by which there are strategies called, sometimes there's a strategy called half a loaf, in which you essentially give away a certain amount of money. And then there's a penalty period associated with that, and it's the other half that you have left to pay the penalty period. That is one option. And there is the fact that Medicaid does allow, to avoid the impoverishment of the what's called the community spouse, they allow that the community spouse to keep a certain amount of money. And potentially in Missouri, that can be $125,000 or so. So sometimes that is not enough. And so sometimes people are saying, no, that's not going to work, because if we go ahead and pay this on our own, it turns out to be fewer months than we think, then maybe my community spouse will end up with $300,000 left or $400,000. And so it is a matter of two things. It's a matter of, one, seeing what can you accomplish in a particular set of circumstances with Medicaid. And as you said, Mark, everybody's different. But I think that's kind of the threshold question. And we agree on that, is let's talk about the elephant in the room and let's see at this initial fork in the road what might make sense. And once we've done that calculation to determine what can you accomplish with Medicaid versus what you can't, then I guess it's a matter of making some decisions about probabilities. You know, it's clearly, to some extent, handicapping. There's no way of getting around it because you simply don't know. Someone may go into a nursing home, have a miraculous recovery. That happens less often. But anyway, I'll mention it. And another is that maybe they're in the nursing home for a very long time, hopefully happily, which is possible. And then third, it may be they're in there a short period of time and they pass away. And we just don't know these things. And so there is a decision, a bet, for lack of a better word, that people have to make in this planning. And I guess you're used to dealing with this every day, Mark, is making decisions based on probabilities about the future that we don't know.
Absolutely. We often look at the wife will live longer than the husband in most cases. I'm an example that wasn't true. My wife has already passed away. But we look at the odds of everything and we try to make the best decision we can. But that's where you need a professional who's keeping current on all the laws and what's going on.
Boy, time has flown. We're going to have you back, Mark Werner, with Cornerstone Advisors. We'll be back next week. This has been another episode of Elder Talk. Take care.
You've been listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.